Hey everybody, it's Britt, lead pastor at Sunridge. Welcome back to our teaching podcast. You know, we are on a mission here at Sunridge to help people find and follow Jesus. We believe in the good news that Jesus welcomes all, regardless of how far you feel from God. That means we're a great starting point to explore Christianity or to sink your spiritual roots deep as a devoted Jesus follower. If you'd like to know more about us, just check out our website at sunridgechurch.org. And of course, we'd love to have you drop in anytime for a visit to learn and worship along with us. And now, here's our teaching for this week.
Morning, Sunridge. Pray with me. God, we're so grateful that we serve and are loved by a God that's reckless with his love and chases us down. There are those of us either watching online or in our building right now that need to be reminded of that. And what I wish we could know whether Judas knew that or not, the subject of our study today. I pray that he did, and I pray that those that feel far from you right now would know that your love pursues them no matter what. In Jesus' name, amen. Hey, if you can be seated, thanks for coming today. If you're new or newish, my name's Britt. I serve here as the lead pastor. And like Jed said, our welcome lunch is today. How many of you have ever gone to a timeshare presentation? How many of you bought in? How many of you bought timeshares? How many of you said no for an hour and a half like me and got free trips to Hawaii? Yeah, thank you. You're my people. I just keep saying no, no, no. And then they'd give up. So I would love to see you if you're new here at our welcome brunch. Again, like Slow Key, it's just about meeting you, you getting to know some of our leadership here, and learning a little bit about our church. But today, I've already tipped my hat that what was up with Judas Iscariot? You ever wonder about him? How does somebody that was invited into Jesus' inner circle by Jesus himself, he spent almost 3 years with him, he heard every teaching, he saw every miracle, he sat at meals day after day with him, he was a first-hand observer of the Son of God, not just wander away, but betray him? If you ask me, Judas isn't just a villain in the story of Jesus in his life and ministry. He's a mystery. And if we're honest with ourselves, I think he can be a warning for us as well. His life is a cautionary tale, not about those people out there, but what can potentially happen in here. And today we wrap up this series on the disciples, in which we've covered 11 of the 12, along with three disciples that were women, Mary and her sister Martha, and then Mary Magdalene. And throughout the series, we've seen that Jesus didn't choose perfect people to change the world. He chose ordinary people who were willing to follow him, and he still does. People like fishermen and hotheads and doubters and just ordinary people with ordinary lives. But through the series, you've probably been wondering if we were going to address the one that we're talking about today. He's the disciple no one has named their kid after, meet my son, Judas Iscariot McCoy. You never heard that. But the question of Judas isn't just why did Judas betray Jesus? The deeper question is, how does someone get that close to Jesus and then miss him? And perhaps the more relevant question for us today to ask is, how is it that someone could be part of a good church, call themselves Christian, and not get the gospel in the end? Judas is going to teach us something today that all of us can heed, that proximity to Christianity is not the same as surrender to Jesus. It's not the same as surrender to Jesus. And today we're going to walk through Judas's life by asking the same four questions we've been asking of all the disciples. What do we know about them? What we see in their story? How did Jesus shape them? And then what does that mean for us? So let's get started. What do we know about Judas? Some quick points. First of all, he was one of the 12 chosen by Jesus. He was chosen by him. He's included in all the list, all the found in the gospel, except the list that's in Acts 1, because by then he had already taken his own life. And that means he wasn't on the outside. He was always included in Jesus' inner circle. The next thing we see about him, he was the banker for the group. He kept the money. They had money to, you know, like carried around a bag of money to fund their ministry and places they stayed. And John says in John 12:6, he was the keeper of the money bag. Also, we know that he looked like every other disciple. Nothing in the record shows that he stood out as the bad one. He just kind of blended in. For example, at the Last Supper, knowing Jesus was being hunted, Jesus says to the group, Matthew 26, 21, truly I tell you, one of you will betray me. And they didn't all point to Judas and say, oh, you mean that guy? Instead, in verse 22, they were very sad and began to say to him one after the other, surely you don't mean me, Lord. So he looked just like everybody else. He fit in. And yet, next thing we know, he agreed to betray Jesus. He betrayed Jesus. Just prior to the Last Supper, Matthew tells us that Judas went to the chief priests and asked, what are you willing to give me if I deliver him over to you? So they counted out for him 30 pieces of silver. And from then on, Judas watched for an opportunity to hand him over. And many of you already know he did so in the most treacherous fashion. John tells us that Judas led officials and soldiers to the garden where Jesus often prayed. And in Matthew 26, 28, the betrayer had arranged a signal with them. The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him. And going at once to Jesus, Judas said, greetings, Rabbi, and kissed him. In Luke's list of the 12, Judas is the only one he kind of parts out to give a character reference for him. And in Luke 6, 16, he lists Judas. He says, and Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor. And that leads to the last thing we know about him that we're going to note today. His remorse was so great about being a traitor that he took his own life. He took his own life. Matthew tells us in the morning after Jesus' arrest, Jesus was condemned to be executed. And then when Judas, who had betrayed him, saw that Jesus was condemned, he was seized with remorse and returned the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and to the elders. And he said, I've sinned, for I've betrayed innocent blood. And what is that to us? They replied. That's your responsibility. So Judas threw the money into the temple and left, and then he went away and hanged himself. Now, a sidebar to this story is what the chief priests do with the money. Verse 6, the chief priests picked up the coins and said, it's against the law to put this into the treasury since it's blood money. So they decided to use the money to buy the potter's field as a burial place for foreigners. And this is a real irony if you're thinking about it. D.A. Carson calls this astonishing moral blindness of the religious leaders. See, the chief priests here, they're scrupulous about the money and what to do with it, but completely blind to their own guilt. They acknowledge the money as blood money. They know an innocent man is being condemned. They recognize the moral contamination of these coins, but they have no problem with an innocent man being executed. And it reveals how self-interested their religious beliefs were. You see, they stood on the principle of not putting tainted money into the temple, but they had no problem putting an innocent man on a cross. Judas feels the guilt but runs away from God's grace, and the religious leaders feel no guilt but hide behind religious activity. That's what we know about Judas from the Bible. So what, in something like what do we know about his character or story? And it'd be easy here to just turn Judas into a cartoon villain, but the Bible doesn't do that. First of all, we see a divided heart. He had a divided heart. John tells us, as the keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to whatever was put in it. So at that point, Judas, he's not a monster. He's just compromised. He's just pinching a little off the top. But here's the thing. No one No one becomes a betrayer or a traitor overnight. It starts smaller than that. It's just a little compromise, a justification, a rationalization, a whisper behind the back, until that drift becomes a direction. Was Judas a betrayer from the very beginning? I personally don't think so. But it seems like one thing led to another. Judas didn't wake up one morning and think, today I'm going to betray Jesus. But eventually he drifted to a place where he thought that was his best choice. Another thing we see about him is we see disappointment with Jesus. He was disappointed. Many scholars believe that Judas expected a political Messiah, much like Simon the Zealot and others. He was looking for someone who would overthrow Rome, create a revolution, give the Jewish people power. But Jesus kept talking about things like love your enemies, serve one another. If a soldier demands you carry his pack for a mile, carry it too. And he said, as my disciple, you should deny yourself and pick up your cross. We know Judas wasn't on the same page with Jesus. Scholars believe it was Judas who led the criticism when a woman poured expensive perfume on Jesus in worship, Mark 14:4. Some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, why this waste of perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages and the money given to the poor. And they rebuked her harshly. And then when Jesus saw honored her sacrifice, then Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went to the priest to betray Jesus. You see, somewhere along the line, Judas didn't adjust his expectations of a life of following the Jesus that was really there, not just the Jesus of his own making. And he became increasingly disillusioned over time. And because of that, it's the next thing we see in the story, that we see a turning point for him. Eventually, Judas allows his self-interest, his stubborn heart to rule, and he gives into something really dark. Luke puts it like this, Luke 22:3, then Satan entered Jesus, called Iscariot, one of the 12. Now, that wasn't just the beginning of his betrayal conversations. It was also a culmination. His views and his self-made Jesus in his mind and all the inner conflict that built up in him and his conscience just gives away. So how did Jesus engage Judas? Now, up to this point, you may have noticed that I've asked a different question of Judas than we have of the other disciples. We've always asked, how did Jesus shape them? But with Judas, that question doesn't work in quite the same way, because like the other disciples, Judas was around Jesus and his people, but he didn't allow Jesus to shape him. So instead of being able to ask, how did Jesus shape him, it's more appropriate we ask, how did Jesus engage him? And how did Judas respond? So a couple things here, a few things. First, again, like Jesus chose Judas. Think about this. Have we seen the other disciples? Luke tells us that it was after a night of prayer that Jesus picks the 12. When morning came, he called his disciples to him and chose the 12 of them, whom he also designated apostles. And then there's all the names, and then the last name is Judas Iscariot. So Judas receives the same invitation of the other disciples. Basically, whosoever will come, may come. Do you want to follow me? So Judas has all the same opportunities as the others. And then we see another way Jesus engaged Judas. He served him. Jesus served Judas. As the threat of arrest increased, Jesus takes on a servant role with his disciples. John 13:3, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal. When John says, Jesus thinks, God has put everything under my power. What does he do with that power? He took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist, and after that he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around them. That was the typical thing to do in the first century. So Judas was treated no differently than his colleagues. It's not like Jesus walked around him, you know, like, I'm not washing your feet. He served him. Another thing we see is Jesus warned Judas. He warned him. Can you guys remember a time when someone warned you about something that you were thinking about doing, but you did it anyway? Like, I don't think you should go to that party. Or, I wouldn't date him, he's trouble. Or, I wouldn't go into business with them because they ripped off their last partner. Or, I wouldn't hire that person because they're a big problem at their last job. Or, I wouldn't jump from up there, right? Some of you have the scars to remind you of those decisions. Well, as the intensity grew, Jesus warned his disciples, but I picture him looking at Judas when he says, Matthew 26, 24, the Son of Man will go just as it is written about him. But woe to that man who betrays the Son of Man. It would be better for him if he were never born. That wasn't a hardcore call out, but it was a clear warning. And don't you think that those words rang in Judas's ears after he held those 30 pieces of silver? What makes us ignore good advice? We also see that Jesus called him friend. He called Judas friend. When Judas betrayed Jesus with a kiss, Jesus said to him, "Do what you came for, friend." Then the men stepped forward, seized Jesus, and arrested him. And I'm sure that having a Judas in his close circle was complicated for Jesus, even though he was the Son of God. You can relate if you've ever had someone at your work that you knew was constantly slamming you behind your back to other coworkers or to your boss, or you had a group of friends that was close, but you knew you couldn't quite trust that one. Jesus practiced what he preached when he said, "Love your enemies." Even in betrayal, Jesus moves toward Judas, which means Judas was never pushed away. He walked away. Those are just a few of the ways Jesus engaged Judas. But as far as we know, and we don't really know, we're only speculating here, that none of Jesus' attempts to reach Judas got through. We can only hope that at the end, the very end, he saw the truth that Jesus loved him, as we sang earlier, that he has a reckless love that hunts us down. That even if he couldn't love himself after what he did, Jesus still loved him. So what does Judas's story mean for us? What can we learn from it? I think that this is where Judas's story comes home for us, because it would be easy to conclude that Judas was a horrible person, and he was. But his story isn't just about him. I think it's a warning to all of us who are believers. I'll tell you why. Number one, being around Jesus is not the same as following Jesus. Judas teaches us that. Being around Jesus is not the same as following him. Judas was present with Jesus, included by Jesus, involved in the ministry of Jesus, but he wasn't surrendered by any means. He always had his own agenda. He wasn't the only one, and he wasn't the last. In doing so, Jesus described some of his followers like this in Matthew 15:8. These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. Meaning, for us, the modern day, we can attend church, know the Christian lingo, raise our hands in worship, participate in Bible studies and small groups, but keep our heart at a distance from God. In our series, Following Jesus, we noted that believing in Jesus is not the same as following Jesus. The point of Christianity isn't just to be active in a church, or to be a good human, or to vote a certain way. It's to be formed by Jesus. The disciples all started in the same place, same access, same opportunity. And Judas, he is included in that. He was involved in all the right stuff, but he missed the point. He followed Jesus, but never fully surrendered to him. He heard every teaching, but he never allowed those teachings to confront him. He saw miracles, but he still demanded his own personal control. Judas was involved in everything Jesus was doing, but he never let Jesus do anything in him. It happens. Jesus will engage you. He will invite you, but he will never force you to be transformed. There's something about our free will that God doesn't often, perhaps never, tinkers with. He wants our hearts willingly. Number two thing that we can take away, that small compromises can lead to big consequences. Judas didn't start with betrayal. He started with dishonesty. Jesus said in Luke 16:10, whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. You see, most people don't wake up one day and decide to ruin their life and others. It's more like a leaky faucet. It just keeps leaking and leaking and leaking, and it's ignored until one day it completely fails. A little compromise here, a hidden habit there, and a slow drift of the heart. And over time, we can end up in a place that we never thought we would be. Steve Taylor was a genius in Christian rock in the 1980s. Back in the 1900s, as some of the young people say today. Yeah, you were born in the 1900s? And he wrote a haunting song. It's called Sin for a Season. I'm going to read some of the lyrics and put up on the screen. There's a sweaty hand handling his cocktail napkin. Come on up and see me, he scribbled with a gold pen. But you better ring twice. 7 months after his little indiscretion, he sits with his wife at a therapy session for a little advice. If the healing happens as the time goes by, tell me why I still can't look her in the eye. God, I'm only human, got no other reason, sin for a season. There's a shaky hand shaking with the hand of her hostess. Drank a little much, but she'll drive herself home if she can make it to her car. She never saw the sign or the boy with his daddy driving home late from their very first ball game, and they don't get far. Now the years run together as her guilt goes wild. She still sees the body of an only child. God, I'm only human, got no other reason, sin for a season. Don't those lyrics haunt you? Left unchecked and unconfessed, small compromises can turn into a wrecking ball in our lives. Number three, disappointment with Jesus can become distance from Jesus. Disappointment can become distance. Like all of us, Judas had expectations of what life would look like following Jesus. And like many of us, when Jesus didn't meet them, when things didn't go as planned, when he discovered God would ask something of him that was really hard, he didn't lean in, he pulled away. One time Jesus said in Matthew 11:6, "Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me." What he meant by that statement is that sometimes it will be hard to follow him. And it's easy to stumble when our allegiance to Jesus will cost us something or requires like a change of our views. When following Jesus means staying and working out a conflict, or following Jesus means getting the prognosis, not the prognosis you prayed for, or that divorce papers come out of nowhere. We can become so disappointed in Jesus that when we're trying to fathom why someone could vote differently than we do, or maybe you're struggling as being a parent because it's not what you thought it would be. Or maybe you're trying to stay in church when you're surrounded by people who think so differently than you. You know, following Jesus isn't for sissies. But we can't let our doubts become distance. We have to take them to him. Now, kind of flipping that, thinking we've disappointed Jesus, this is the last point, can also become distance. When we think we've disappointed Jesus, we can distance ourselves. Guilt causes us to tell ourselves lies about God's grace. Judas's guilt and pain was so overwhelming that he thought there was no way back. How sad is that? Judas felt remorse, but he never brought his remorse to Jesus. And then on the other hand, you have Peter, who fails miserably and denies Jesus, but eventually he runs back to him. God makes no excuse for sin, but the Bible's clear that God's love never fails. When Jesus looked down from the cross at his crucifiers as they divided up his clothes, he said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing." That's how great Jesus' love is. And don't you wish Judas could have realized how great God's love was for him after he betrayed him? How different his story would have been. Some of you are tempted to let your guilt drive you far from God. But the gospel is this, that no one is so far from God that his love can't reach them. And no one is so perfect that they don't need God's love desperately. So Judas is a cautionary tale that reminds us, don't ever let what you think you've done or said or even thought drive you away from him. So let me take you back to where we started. Judas is a mystery, but he's also a warning, because his story forces us to wrestle with this. Is it possible to be close to Jesus and still miss him? And that's the tension we've been living in this entire series. All summer long, we've looked at the disciples, ordinary people. Peter, who failed but kept coming back. Thomas, who doubted but leaned in. Mary, who sat at Jesus' feet. The others who stumbled, learned, and then grew. None of them were perfect, but here's the difference. They let Jesus shape who they were becoming. Judas didn't. He was there for all of it, but he always held back a big part of himself, and in the end, that distance cost him everything. I'm going to ask the band to come up. And this is why this matters for us, because the question of this series was never just, who were the disciples? The question has always been, like, what kind of disciple am I becoming? So as we close this series, I want to ask you, just plain and simple, are you just around Jesus, or are you surrendering to him? You see, Jesus is still inviting people to follow him. The same one that chose Judas, which means as long as you're breathing, it's not too late to respond to him. Judas walked away from Jesus, but you don't have to. So maybe today, the most honest prayer some of us could pray would be something like this. Jesus, I don't want just to be around you. I want to surrender to you. I don't want to just know about you, but I want to be changed by you. Not just follow at a distance, but trust you with my whole life. Because that has been the heartbeat of this entire series. Jesus chose people like this, and he still does. Not perfect people, not polished people, not people who have it all figured out, but people who are willing to say, I'm yours. And when you do that, you won't just be around Jesus. You won't just be close to Jesus. You'll actually get to know him. And over time, you'll slowly become like him. You'll be a disciple. Let's stand and worship together.
Hey, everybody, it's Britt again. Thanks for listening. If you need something, if you have a question, or you'd just like us to pray for you, you can reach us through email, info@sunridgechurch.org. We hope you'll listen in again next week, but in the meantime, keep helping people find and follow Jesus.